Hello, ladies. Are you struggling with hair loss? I want you to know you're not alone. Hi, I'm Bambi Staveley, former registered nurse, author, founder of Boost and Blend, and someone who probably just like you has had first-hand experience with hair loss, which is all covered in my latest book, Hair Loss in Women. When I noticed my own hair thinning 15 years ago, I went looking for information and I went looking for products for women, just like you and me. But all I could find out there was products made for men. And most of the information I could find was about male pattern baldness. Well, that's not much help. So I set out to change that. I want to see women with hair loss talking about it and talking to each other, sharing their stories from a place of knowledge. So join me as I meet some courageous women. I'll share some information and we'll learn together on the Hair Loss in Women podcast. Hi, ladies, and welcome to the Hair Loss in Women podcast. In this podcast, you'll hear real stories from women like you and me about their hair loss. I'm also going to share some facts, some information, and some interesting tips around hair loss in the aim to help every woman listening in some way. So you'll hear that straight after our interview. And for this episode, I'll be talking about stress. So make sure you stay listening after the interview for that. Of course, in this episode and in all the episodes, the advice given is of a general nature. Please check with your doctor for specific health advice. I believe that the most powerful way to connect and feel okay about where we're at is to share stories. So, with that in mind, I've asked some women who have struggled with hair loss themselves, some who found a way to improve it, and some who are still living with their hair loss, to share their stories with you. And I'm really grateful for their contribution. Today, I'm talking to someone who broke her silence about her own hair loss when she appeared on the Australian TV program Insight in 2022. I hope you enjoy this conversation I had with Jot. Jot, welcome to the podcast, and thanks for talking to me and to all of us today.
Thanks, baby.
I want to find out about this moment when you decided to talk quite publicly about your hair loss. But first, tell me a bit about your own journey. When did you first discover you were losing your hair?
Look, I started noticing hair loss probably when I was 16, but I didn't really pay attention to it. And in fact, because I had really, really thick, long hair growing up, it was really hard to manage. And so when it was falling out and it was, 16, I was in high school, like final year of high school, in a way I was kind of a little bit relieved because I felt like if I had less hair, it'd be a little bit more manageable. I didn't really think anything of it. But when I was in my early 20s, I went to see a dermatologist about my skin. And she said to me, oh, I noticed that your hair's a little bit thin at the front there. And I hadn't really thought about it. I was never, one of these girly girls that really worried about hair, makeup, fashion, any of that sort of stuff. So I was like, oh, okay. I think she then referred me to a specialist dermatologist. I think I was now in my mid-20s. And he did a scalp biopsy and basically said, you have androgenic alopecia. I wasn't super surprised because both my mum and dad had hair loss. So I had the crappy hair genes on both sides of the family. So from about that point on, I've gone down the medication path. So I've been on one form of medication or another since that time. I have sort of taken breaks from it, but the medication pathway has changed over the years because when I first started, all you could have was a topical minoxidil. But then, then they started giving you Spiro and then they were starting to combine it. And then, various different drugs came on the market that they were using for female hair loss. I had sort of started using fibers at that point, but I did the whole looking at the back of my scalp with a mirror and realizing how thin the crown had gotten. And then that was when I was like, okay, it's really progressed. And while I've been on medication, it's hard to know because if I hadn't been on it, it might have progressed a lot more. these days I kind of, I wear toppers when I wear my hair down, and I wear fibers when I, or use fibers when I wear my hair up, because I wear my hair up in a bun. And so, you know, you can cover that sort of back area. So yeah, that's sort of how my journey has been over the last 25, 30 years.
Wow. So are you on any medication these days?
Yeah, I am. So I'm on a combination of like sublingual minoxidil by glutamide, okay, and a combination of sort of these vitamins, minerals, kind of, it's a combination drug that they give
and
us.
Do you feel that that's making a difference?
Like I said, it's hard to know. You know, I'm still shedding hair, but would I have a lot more if I wasn't on it? I'm, you know, now post-menopause, and I know things get a lot worse in that time of our life. So it's really hard to know. The good thing is I don't really get side effects. So I'm happy to keep taking them. You know, if I was someone that was getting really nasty side effects, I would have probably stopped a long time ago.
So you're wearing either up with fibers or down with a topper, and that's pretty much every day.
Well, if I'm home, I don't go. In fact, when I go out shopping, I just wear a cap. I don't wear fibers or a topper, because with androgenic alopecia, the texture of your hair changes. So it becomes quite frizzy and, you know, dry, and it doesn't really matter what shampoos or oils you put in it. It doesn't really help me. And I know some people, when they wear fibers, they just don't like the way their hair looks. And so you would prefer to wear a wig or a topper all the time. But I'm not too fussed about that. And I go to work essentially with fibers and, you know, my hair up in a bun.
It's an interesting world we live in, you and I. You know, it's just something that only I think other women who are going through what we're going through could really appreciate, how much it adds to our day, to getting ready in the morning. You know, to having someone stay over. We had some friends stay over this last week, and you know, you just want to always look your best. So there's a lot we need to do to stay on top of that. Tell me, what was the reception like after the show? And, you know, what was it like to tell your story on television?
Yeah.
It must have been a very daunting task.
It was very daunting. It was very nerve-wracking. I questioned myself, questioned why I was doing that, you know, why I was putting myself through that kind of stress, because, you know, I'm not someone that likes to be the center of attention or anything. You know, I don't like public speaking or anything like that. So I think, though, that once I committed to it, I kind of had to go through with it. I think the thing was, though, that I didn't get asked a lot of things. You know, usually with the Insight program, they'll feature one or two people, and then they'll have the other people that they'll just ask one or two questions of. And I guess the other thing for me was that there was two really young girls who, you know, I think one was 8 or 9 and the other one was 11, and both of them had alopecia universalis or areata. And I just kind of saw how brave they were. Like, they were, I bumped into one of them in the foyer of the hotel, and, you know, we got the cab together with her mum to the studio, and I sort of said to her, "Oh, how are you feeling about this?" And she said, "Nervous but excited." And I said, "Yeah, me too." You know? But yeah, they were incredibly brave, and so yeah, I figured if they could do it, you know, I should put my big curl pants on and be able to do it as well. But I actually think that putting the post up on Facebook, I was more nervous about that, because before the show, like, you know, we filmed the show 2 or 3 months before it actually is put on air. So when we got the date of when it was going to be put on air, like the day before, I put a post up on Facebook, and that was like, I was really, really nervous about that, because I think perhaps because these are the people that should care about you, and you hope that they would support you and that there wouldn't be any like judgment or anything like that. So whereas when you're on TV, like, it's a bunch of strangers essentially, so you don't really care that much. The good thing was I had some private messages from friends who said, you know, I have the same thing, and I didn't know. They said, "We didn't know about you, and we have it as well." And cousins of mine who live overseas, they sort of also which doesn't surprise me because, you know, same genes, I guess. So they said as well, you know, we have thin hair and maybe we should talk to you about toppers and things like that. So, yeah, overwhelmingly supportive, no negative comments. It's like old news, you know, no one's really talked about it since. I don't really post about it on Facebook, you know, my account on Instagram. I've got a hair loss account and then a personal account, and I don't really kind of mix the two.
So before the Facebook post, had you not told your friends, or were your friends not aware of your hair loss journey?
There was probably only my partner at the time knew, and I would walk around the house with no topper or no fibres or anything. So, you know, yeah, I think I told a couple of friends, but overall, no. It was like, you know, my doctors, my treating practitioners, my support group, all the people on Instagram, of which none of them are like my friends, you know, my in real life friends. So no, I hadn't told them. And I think it's because I'm just generally pretty private about, here I am on a podcast and went on TV, but, you know, I'm generally pretty private about things, certain things in my life. And so it's not that I was necessarily hiding it from them, although, you know, the first time I wore a topper, it was very different to my natural color. And it was actually a guy that, you know, a male friend that noticed it first and said, oh, what have you done to your hair? And I had a ready-made response, but he said, oh, what have you done to your hair? It looks very different. Because my natural hair is quite wavy and it's obviously a natural black color. And I had a topper that was, you know, a dark brown with highlights through it. And they've never seen me with highlights. So I just sort of said, yeah, I've had it colored and, you know, I've had it straightened. And I've put extensions in for added volume rather than length, which is kind of true. You know, toppers like for volume rather than length. Yeah, so he just said, oh, yeah, it looks good. You know, conversation moved on. Right. And another girlfriend of mine, when I told her, she actually told me when I sent that Facebook post out, she messaged me and she said, when I asked you about it and you told me you'd done all these things, she said, I thought to myself, I should do the same thing, because she was experiencing hair loss as well. So it's pretty daunting to wear it out the first time, particularly if it looks different to your hair.
But, you know, I think for you and for me, the reason we're doing what we're doing and sharing is just because we want to give other people the confidence to do the same. And it's funny you saying that when you told people, and particularly your cousins and other family members, who all went, oh, really, you too? Well, that's us, you know. And that's the amazing thing about female hair loss. We are so not alone. And I think there's this tendency to feel alone about it, particularly if we keep it to ourselves. And so putting it out there and having these conversations really does help other people it helps to normalize it, because it is so common. You've gone on to create this group who meets up in Melbourne. So tell us a little bit about that group.
So it's actually a support group that is Australia-wide and into New Zealand, but then there's been these offshoot meetup groups set up. So we have them in Melbourne, Brisbane, Perth, Sydney, Auckland, and it's just a really nice way to meet some of the people that you're talking to online, face-to-face. I really encourage people who are just starting out, you know, on their hair loss journey. I don't really like calling it journey, but, you know, they're just starting to work out what they want to do, to come along to these groups and have a chat to the ladies, because everyone is at a different place. I think it's good for them to see that people live quite happily, you know, women live quite happily with it, and it's not the end of the world. And, you know, it concerns me when the women are like, I don't want to leave the house and, you know, I'll never meet someone. Like, it's really sad when you hear stories like that. And if I do hear stories like that, I'm always referring them off to a psychologist, or, you know, go to the GP to get some referral for some counselling. Yeah, and then when they kind of meet women who have been experiencing it for a very long time, they can see that actually life is still good.
Mm. Yeah. Interesting thing is that once you become accustomed to the fact that this is you and you work out your way of dealing with it, whatever that is, and for all of us it's different, that we can, I always say to walk out into the world and try to look for opportunities to make somebody else smile. That's just something that I really like to do. And I think we, you know, feeling good looking for me is about trying to make other people feel great. That looking out for other people, looking out for, you know, smiling to people who maybe someone hadn't smiled at them today. And, you know, things like that that make us feel good about ourselves rather than focusing on how we look or how our hair looks, which, you know, it's all very well to say. For each of us, it's different and how we feel about it is different. So what do you think has been the hardest thing for you to deal with?
There are times even now, even though I've been, you know, living with it for a long time, where I'm just absolutely fed up and I, you know, I just would like to be able to just wear my hair back in a ponytail when I used to do that when I was younger. It's particularly when I'm, you know, I was away in Bali and it was really hot and I just didn't want to wear a topper. And, you know, although I had a hat on most of the time, it's like, well, I have to take my hat off, you know, fibers, it's too hot. Like, you know, that whole thing and just, yeah, having to think, like even now when people come to my house, like if a tradie comes to my house, like I'll put away all my wigs, and, you know, because I've got wigs out on the shelf and I'll just, and toppers, I just like, I'll put it away because I think I just don't want to answer questions unless I'm kind of ready to do it. So even though I've been on TV and I'm, you know, I've got this group and things, like I really want it to be on my terms and who I tell and how I tell them. So although it may seem that I'm open, I'm probably not as open as some people where they just are quite comfortable wearing different coloured wigs or anyone that comes into their home and they just leave everything out. And I kind of wish I didn't care so much. You know, there are people on Instagram that I take my hat off to them and I'll walk out with no fibres, you know, nothing, you know, no topper, no wig, and they're in a place that they're so comfortable that they'll do it. I'm not there. I'm not there yet. And I may not be, but.
No, well, we're all so different. So, yeah. You know, that's the great thing also about this is being able to tell other women that there are other people like them. There are, you know, I'm self-conscious as well. You're self-conscious. That's totally normal.
Yeah.
And we can normalize that. We don't have to be willing to go out without a hat on or without fibers in. We don't have to be that person. We can be who we are. And, you know, I think you've been really brave to speak out as publicly as you have. Do you think there's been some good come out of speaking out for you?
Yeah, I think that it's, you know, like knowing that there's people in my family, and my mom's not around anymore, but, you know, knowing that there's female cousins who, you know, are going through the same thing and that I can be there, you know, for support and advice if they need it. Mm. You know, creating like a nice circle of friends that are going through the same thing. And we've moved on from the fact that our own common, you know, the thing that kind of links us is hair loss. Like we've now moved on to more a friendship based thing. But I do want to say about the hardest thing, it's like the up and down. I don't stay down for very long. Like I'm lucky in that way that, you know, yeah, I'll feel kind of like I'm just, I hate this and I'm fed up with it. But those periods don't really last that long. Mm. And I am just generally someone that just gets on with life, yeah. You know, yeah. And try not to think about it. Like I understand when people like say they're freaking out, you know, but I do try, particularly in my group, I do try and get them away from the counting how much hair is dropping. You know, they're like, oh, I drop, you know, I've got like 100 hairs. And it's like, you've got to stop doing that because it's going to drive you crazy. Yeah, I'm lucky in that, you know, psychologically, I've always been pretty strong. I'm not in the depths of depression ever or anything like that about my hair loss or anything. So. Mm.
Well, that's great to hear. That really is. And I think that's encouraging for other people as well. And as for the counting hair, that is one of my greatest bugbears. I just don't think it's necessary. I think it's something that we should discourage other women from doing, I think.
I think so. And I think, but you know, when people are right at the start of it and they're just kind of, you know, freaking out, like I can understand that, but it's not good to kind of dwell on that. The other thing I was going to say about the, you know, the good to come out of it is it, you know, I've created a support group that it's a very safe space in that, you know, it's one of the few groups that isn't run by a wig seller or a, you know, a company that is, you know, marketing or produces like some other kind of hair loss product. And so the members feel safe to be able to really provide good feedback about a topper they might have bought or a fiber brand that they might have bought. And I think it's important that the women have that space to be able to do that. It makes me feel good when I see someone new come in and they say, you know, they ask a question and all these women are like commenting and providing advice and support and, you know, encouragement. And it, you know, it kind of, yeah, it makes me feel good that people are stepping up.
Yeah, absolutely. And so if we're talking to women who might be in the very early stages of their hair loss journey, and I think at the beginning your hair starts to fall out, you start to Google help, my hair's falling out, and hopefully they will find us and our conversation. So what would you like women who might have only just recently discovered this issue to know?
And the firstly is that you're not alone. It's a very common problem. But I think rather than go to Dr. Google, which is our first reaction, is that you have to find a GP who will take your concerns seriously. I've talked to enough women where the GP just is very disinterested and just says it's stress, use minoxidil or nothing. And, you know, so, you know, find a GP that will take your concerns seriously, will refer you to a specialist dermatologist because not all of them treat hair loss. And then, you know, weigh up your options in terms of management based on what the dermatologist says, what the diagnosis is, and then, you know, weigh up the options. I would also say, you know, get involved with the hair loss community on Facebook and Instagram, but try not to get all of your advice from them. What I found very early on Instagram was there was quite a strong anti-medication narrative. And so anyone that was saying or posted to say, you know, I've got androgenic alopecia or I've got alopecia areata and I'm thinking about, you know, taking medication, a whole lot of people would get on and just say, you know, that's poison and why are you doing that? And just because I would never say to someone, you should take medication. You know, it's about knowing your own circumstances. And the other thing is there are no magic potions. There are no magic shampoos. These shampoos that say will regrow your hair, like they don't. If you're using a shampoo and your hair is regrowing, it's likely it would have regrown without it. So don't get sucked into the marketing hype and try and stick with evidence-based medicine. When someone asks me that question in my group, I have a lot of tips to, you know.
Yes, I do too.
To give them and yeah.
yeah.
But those are probably my main ones.
Yep. No, I'm with you there. Okay, well, thank you so much, Jot. Really appreciate you taking the time to talk about your story so openly for the good of the community, which is, I think, what you and I and so many women want to do.
And thanks for the invitation. I think I'm looking forward to hearing everyone else's stories as well.
Thank you, Jot, for sharing your hair loss story. We really appreciate it. Have you got a story to tell that you'd like to share? Well, we'd all love to hear from you. We'd love to hear your story because sharing stories and helping each other is what we're all about. And then it helps us all to realize that we're actually not alone in this. So this is the part of the show where I share with you some information or some tips around women's hair loss. If you have a question about hair loss or something you'd like me to answer, you can email me at bambi@boostandblend.com and I'll try my best to answer that for you. So for today's Did You Know segment, I'm going to talk about stress. Stress has a lot to answer for these days, especially for women. We seem to tackle so much. We've got work, some people have kids or older kids, aging parents, maybe even throw in some further education. managing everything at home, or even a side hustle, as well as all of that. The list goes on. So there is a lot of stress in our lives, and there's not a lot we can do about it. Broadly, there are two types of stress that are associated with hair loss. The first one is a sudden, acute, really obvious shedding, and that's called telogen effluvium, or TE. And the second type is more of a long-term degeneration, which is due to stress really at the cellular level of our hair follicles. So I'm going to talk about TE, telogen effluvium, the sudden type first. This kind of hair loss usually happens a few months after the event that caused it. So due to the nature of the hair growth cycle, which is growth, rest, shed, and then the cycle starts again, we find that a few months later, the cycle was interrupted. So at some point, something was going on in your life, perhaps 3 months earlier, and the body didn't prioritize hair growth during that stressful period. And it's interesting how the body does this. It actually concentrated on other more important things, like keeping you alive, for example, because hair really isn't necessary for our survival. And the body knows that. So it knows not to expend too much energy or too many precious resources like nutrients on growing hair. So this is why a few months after the trauma, there is a sudden shed. What we're talking about here in terms of what causes it is something like a bout of acute stress, illness, for example, something severe, or even COVID, even mild or severe COVID either, something upsetting and or devastating, like perhaps a divorce or a death. Major surgery is something else that can cause this kind of hair loss. And moving house, moving overseas, or even just a big life-changing move. These things can cause an interruption to the hair growth cycle, which then ends up in a shed a few months later. And actually, a couple of years ago, my parents, who were both in their 80s at the time, they moved from the family home to seniors living. It was a massive upheaval for them. There were treasures that were going, there were memories that were going, there was furniture that they had loved which they couldn't take with them. And after they moved and after they'd settled in a couple of months later, they both had sudden hair loss. It was really interesting. It was about 3 months after they moved. And in my line of work, I was truly fascinated actually to see it so clearly and firsthand. And actually, there was hair everywhere in their new place. And my mother said, you know, what's happening? My hair's falling out. And I said, yeah, Mum, it really is. And it's due to the stress of that move. I hadn't realized just how much that move had stressed her out. But I gave them both some of my shampoo and one of the growth shampoos to make sure that they were at least using good quality stuff while their hair recovered. And it did. You know, and by the way, there are no miracle shampoos, people. There wasn't a shampoo that suddenly grew hair. It was just a good quality boost and blend shampoo. But the shedding stopped and they both returned to their previous full hair. And in fact, my mother's husband has a lot of hair for a man now in his 90s. But anyway, I digress. So TE is temporary. Okay, it's sudden, it can be severe, but it is temporary. So if that's happening to you, think back 3 months or so ago to what was going on in your life at the time. And once the stressful situation has passed, your hair will recover. It should stop within a couple of months and you should start to see new growth within, say, 6 to 12 months. Now, it's a very broad range because it does depend on you and your overall health, but try not to stress over it. Let nature take its course. Don't dwell on it too much. But if it's been longer than, say, 12 months and you're still shedding, then you'll need to look for an underlying cause. So in that case, while stress was the trigger, there is something else going on, I'm afraid. So you'd need to see a doctor and start with that, get a blood test, at least as a starting point, because there are literally dozens of underlying causes. And obviously, I can't cover them all here. They are covered in my book, though, Hair Loss in Women. On to the second kind of hair loss caused by stress, and that is long-term cellular damage caused by long-term and chronic stress. So completely different to the previous type of acute sudden stress. So this isn't just the stress you feel. This is stress on your body. cellular stress is a long-term degenerative process, and it affects all the cells in the body, not just the hair follicle, but definitely including the hair follicle. And as you may know, stress is combated through the hormone cortisol. And raised cortisol over the long term, staying consistently high, can lead to all sorts of problems. It's actually known as a reason for hair loss on its own, but can also contribute to what we call systemic inflammation. And that is an inflammatory process that affects the body as a whole. And so that can contribute to hair loss also. This is then a vicious cycle. So stress leads to raised cortisol, which leads to inflammation, which then leads to female hair loss. And female hair loss can cause stress. And around we go. But there may be other factors that are also at play, such as type 2 diabetes or being overweight, emotional and or even physical stress, and cellular stress that affects the mitochondria or the energy station of the hair cell. And so as you can see, that this kind of long-term, drawn-out, debilitating stress can cause damage to the hair follicle at the cellular level. Unfortunately, stress is a major factor in our modern lives. There's, you know, cortisol, the hormone that we release to combat it, is always going to be there. But high circulating cortisol itself, even without inflammation, is a known factor in hair loss. There is actually a scalp hair analysis that they can do, which can measure cortisol. And increased levels of cortisol have been found in the scalp, and particularly in the scalp hair of people with hair loss. And actually, in the study that I read, it was also there if they were obese, which is actually considered a form of physical stress. So there's a lot of factors at play here when it comes to stress and hair loss. And I've actually read literally hundreds of studies on hair loss while I was researching my book. And there is so much documented evidence, which leads to the conclusion that stress is and has long been implicated as one of the causal factors involved in hair loss. Even stress caused by experiencing hair loss is a significant contributing factor to hair loss itself. So take note, ladies, it truly can be a vicious cycle. And so the suggestion, don't stress about your hair loss, is really much easier said than done. However, I do really believe in trying your best to manage your stress. Try everything you can to give yourself a better hair outcome. And in fact, it makes me think of my first experience with hair loss with my hairdresser. This is going back over 15 years now, but she was doing my hair and she suddenly started laughing, as was her style. And she said, "Oh, this is hilarious. You've got a bald patch on the back of your head." And she just laughed and laughed, and I laughed, and I don't know what I thought. I'd never thought about having hair loss before, but it was like, oh, I've got a bald patch, right. But, do you know, because she laughed, I didn't worry about it. It was hidden. I mean, you couldn't see it under my hair. Only she knew it was there and now I knew it was there. But because I didn't worry about it, I didn't stress about it. And actually, it completely disappeared. I forgot about it. And it disappeared. And I think my ignorance, because that was clearly an indication of things to come, but my ignorance at that time may have served me quite well. I didn't stress over it. And also, since I began using Boost and Blend cotton hair fibers, I don't stress about my hair loss either, because I don't stress about it being noticed. I'm perfectly camouflaging it. Nobody would have any idea. And this provides some relief from the stress of hair loss for me, and therefore relief from its potential effect on my self-esteem. So look, ladies, stress is a huge topic, and there's actually a whole chapter on it in my book. So if you think this could be you, maybe get a copy of the book, because I can't explain it all here and I can't go into all the details that you need to understand. So not only do I explain it in more detail in my book, but I've got lots of suggestions on ways to combat hair loss when it's caused by stress. So there's a lot in there. There's a lot on stress. You've got a lot to learn if you think stress is perhaps one of your causal factors. So I would encourage you to research stress and hair loss. So that brings us to the end of our very first episode. I hope you've enjoyed this. Don't forget to subscribe or follow the podcast so that you know when a new episode is out. Look, I know only too well how hard it can be to face hair loss each and every day. And so I have a saying that I'd like to share with you that I try to remember when I'm going through difficult times, and that is, kindness is beautiful, so wear it every day. Thanks for joining me on the Hair Loss in Women podcast. And a big thank you to the women who share their stories here and with others in their community. One of the hardest things about hair loss for women is that we don't talk about it. So if you do want to hear more, please subscribe to the podcast. And if you like what you heard, why not leave a review? Positive reviews will help other women to find this podcast too. You can also find out more in my book, Hair Loss in Women. This podcast has been recorded in Sydney, Australia, and is produced by Pod and Pen Productions.